If you haven't got problems, I feel bad for your son. I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one. Tip my hat to the sun in the west. Feel the beat right in my chest. At the crossroads a second time. Make the devil change his mind. A bitch ain't one. If you haven't got problems, I feel bad for your son. I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
Hey everybody, welcome to War of the Bay. I am Kyle, and it's just me. Well, it's not just me, but there's gonna be more people here. Trust me, guys. Trust me. How's your 4th of July? How'd it go? Apparently, this is the thing I didn't know, but I guess the fireworks were a little bit of a dud in the Tampa Bay area. St. Pete didn't have their fireworks. Tampa, there were some issues, but had a great time. I had a great time 4th of July, and I hope you guys did too, to celebrate our fair country. I got a great show for you guys. Got a great show in store for you guys today. Got a few guests, or actually a couple guests, but I want to get to one thing. It came out yesterday that the Tampa Bay Rays were going to reveal their new stadium renderings on Tuesday for the Ybor Stadium. And at least I hope that they're also going to come out with how they're going to finance the goddamn thing, because that's been the whole thing this entire time. I understand that the Rays want a stadium down in Ybor, and I understand that that it's not working in St. Pete. But if you're going to get your new stadium, who's paying for it, Stu? Who's paying for the stadium? But I think a lot of things are going to be answered with this. The number one thing for me is, are we going to see like a fixed roof stadium? Are we going to see a retractable roof stadium? Are we going to see an open air stadium with maybe some kind of a sail like they proposed down at Al Lang Field? I don't know. I am firmly on the team of let's keep it cheap. Let's go the Minnesota Vikings route and let's make a stadium with like a bunch of windows that looks, you know, that looks sort of open air, that has the feel of an open air stadium, but that's still entirely inside, because it's completely fucking ridiculous to ask Tampa fans to stand or sit outside of a stadium in the middle of July. It is so hot. It's so hot, and it rains every day at 4. There's no way that you can that you can have it be an outdoor stadium or some kind of hybrid. So to me, this is going to answer one big question: is okay, are we paying for the retractable roof or are we not? If the Rays are smart, if they're a smart team, they're going to say we're not paying for the retractable roof, and that we're going to have a fixed roof dome, because it's going to take a few hundred million off the cost of the stadium. Which, by the way, they haven't even committed to financing. They haven't. I don't know that they've even committed any percent of financing at this point. So hopefully we get a better idea of that, because I believe Ken Hagen himself even said that it's going to take the Rays financing at least half of the stadium for it to get built. But you saw another thing that sort of happened this week was that there were some tax breaks that came out in favor of Ybor City. Now, I don't know exactly what those tax breaks are, so I'm not going to say anything about them, but still think it's pretty interesting that seems like it's getting closer and closer. Tuesday's going to be a big day, because if they're going to go for broke and they're going to go for big air in the stadium, I don't see how it gets funded. But if they go for modest, I really can't say. And it's for two reasons. Number one being that The Rays have already come out and said that they're going to try to do new things with the stadium. They're going to try to make it sort of an all-year destination as opposed to just baseball. So they're going to try to make it a place that you need to be at in spite of the weather, right? I would imagine. Or at least they're going to try to get concerts there. They're going to try to hold events there. Maybe they have something that's open 24 hours, or not 24 hours, but rather, you know, all year round, 365 days a year, say for, you know, holidays. I wonder. Because I love Ybor City, I think during the day it's a great place to be. And if I think you add something like that Rays Stadium as like as a destination, then I think you have a viable option there. But if they're going for big air here, and which I think, okay, if you're going to employ that strategy, then maybe they're going for big air, then it's going to be a retractable roof stadium, which I think is a huge mistake. Either way, it has to be air conditioned and it has to be indoors. So, you know, kind of with that line of thinking, I don't know. I think they're going to go greedy. I think maybe that I just have this bad feeling they're going for big air. They're going for the retractable roof, and they're gonna ask for $800 million. And then are they gonna actually contribute $400 million? I don't know, dude. I don't know. Very big day is Tuesday in my mind. I mean, we've been taking steps forward, and I think another step forward would be a modest proposal. A modest stadium proposal. I'm not talking about eating babies. I'm talking, by the way, a modest proposal. Google it. But a modest proposal for a stadium, I think, is what I'm looking for in this news on Tuesday. But I haven't even talked about the team on the field. Jesus Christ, holy shit. Carlos Gomez is having feuds with Gatorade bottles. Or not bottles, but whole coolers. He's batting up coolers. He makes more contact with the coolers than he does with the actual baseball. Holy shit. This guy, I hate being on this end of the story, because as a baseball fan, when I see those highlights, I'm like, wow, that dude is out of control. Like, clearly that team is not in control. And now it's happening with my team. Carlos Gomez is going ham on Gatorade coolers, and I'm supposed to be okay with it, I guess. You know, he's hitting a cool 198, I believe. So, you know, maybe rightfully so. The refs were fucking him that night. You know what? I may have 74 strikeouts on the year, but you know, I really got fucked that inning by the umps. Like, Carlos, why don't you go sit down? You're not. I don't want you on my team anymore. To be honest, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. I'd rather have, you know, actual players that are willing to contribute and aren't fucking psychopaths when it comes to on-field and off-field. Holy shit, dude. God. The Rays just lost to the Miami Marlins, and then they also won a marathon game, which was a back and forth that saw Jake Bowers driving in two runs. But what I'm trying to get at is this 8-1 homestand where we defeat the likes of I don't know. How about the New York Yankees? How about the Houston Astros, your defending World Series champions? And how about the Washington Nationals, who kind of suck? who have Bryce Harper, and then after this year, nobody. But still, you know, you win your home games and you're winning any two games a year. That's fucking solid. I'll take that all day. So the Rays doing good at home against all odds is something that I love. And, God, what can you say about them? I can't say anything about them that I haven't said in previous shows, and just that they are surprising to me. I'm very happy to watch this team. It's been a very fun season, win and loss. I mean, we just dropped this road trip to the Marlins, but you know what? They're still a fun team to watch. I mean, they got this crazy bullpen thing going. They got an all-star in Blake Snell, who's who's fucking dealing. They got Wilson Ramos, who's you know, kind of running away with maybe the best catcher in the American League. And speaking of which, I think Wilson Ramos, and Mark Tompkin wrote this today in the paper, but I think Wilson Ramos is not long for this world, and I think I will agree. Al Buschman was on last week, and he sort of talked about, you know, which of these players do you think gets traded, Danny Hechevarria, Wilson Ramos, or the third guy? I forget who he said. But I think Danny Hechevarria for sure gets traded, or you know, maybe even designated for assignment. I mean, I don't think he stays on this roster past the trade deadline. Either way, you got to have Willy Adames up. So I really don't think he's going to be here when it comes to the second half of the season. I think that's for sure. And then you have Wilson Ramos, who last week we were kind of talking about, okay, should we resign him? I think a lot of people are saying yes, but what if we just trade the guy? We got a young up and coming catcher in the minor leagues right now, and his name escapes me. It starts with some kind of a C. I don't know, but I know that he's down there, and he's playing well. And one of the things that I've seen is like, okay, well, the Rays as an organization can't develop catcher talent, so why not keep Ramos around and develop this new guy? To which I say, yeah, you know, I get it. I get what you're trying to say, but I don't think I agree with it. I think you go get the value that Ramos has right now because, holy shit, he's a silver slugger winner. He's an all-star. He's going to be an all-star this year. We're not going to resign him. Are we going to be able to afford that? Fuck no. So go and get your money for him and trade for a team that's going to take him because we're not making the playoffs this year. We're not. Even though we're playing good, even though we just had that 8-1 homestand, we're not making the playoffs. So I think you go and trade a Wilson Ramos, and then we kind of load up for next year. Load up on more prospects. For fuck's sakes, we just had Brent Honeywell, Anthony Banda go down with a Tommy John surgery, and then I believe we had our another guy go down. So it only like. Let's go get a starting pitcher, maybe. Let's. I don't know. I think you do trade. Yeah, I think you trade Ramos. Let's just. I don't think you're really throwing caution to the wind. I think trade him. Just trade the guy. Let him go add value to some team that's going to make the playoffs instead of just like fucking buttering away here on Tampa Bay Rays, maybe being somewhere around 500 at the end of the season, but certainly not in the playoffs. I think you got to get rid of Ramos. That's my honest opinion. Ooh. Well, I've talked enough about these Tampa Bay Rays, and I got a lot of guests to get to, so let's get to the first. This first guy has taken a lot of flack this week, and I don't think rightfully so. I mean, he's a reporter. He's not. Bucks fans need to learn the difference, and I think they will, between a reporter and a journalist. This guy's a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. So, Greg, thanks for coming on the show and taking time out of your day. I know you're. I'm a guy that just sits down in front of a mic once a week and just, you know, does a thing. But you actually you have to pay the bills on like generating content every day. So I really appreciate you actually taking some time out to talk with me.
No problem at all.
Before I get started, like I said right before I hit record, any sweet Eric Carlson news here? Like, is it happening? Do you think it's happening?
I'm definitely. I mean, it's. Things are far enough along where it looks like they're trying to get a third team involved. So, no, I'll be kind of staying by the phone, keeping an eye on things the whole night. So, no, it wouldn't surprise me if it happened at all.
Yeah, no, especially with Steve Eisman. He likes to do those late-night deals where at 12 o'clock he kind of slides in a trade. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you have that window where you're done for the paper for the night, but you got to be ready for anything at all hours pretty much.
Yeah. I'm going to shift gears like right away and talk about maybe the biggest news of the offseason, which everybody's kind of talking about, and it's very controversial. But the Bucks dropped J.R. Sweezy, and you know, I for one was shocked that happened. But in all seriousness, I think Do you think that that's more – does that speak more to the fact that, okay, they're going to trust in their young offensive linemen and Caleb Benenach and Alex Kappa, or is it the injury thing? Is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think what it points to is that even when he was healthy last year, I think what that tells you is that there was more than just the injury that concerned them about him.
Really?
You go back to, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's more than the injury, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's just kind of being ineffective. So, going back to, NFL owners meetings, you heard Dirk Koetter mentioning Caleb Benenach. I think he called him the wild card at right guard at the time. And I think they feel really good. Benenach's a guy that's been a tackle, has been a guard, has bounced back and forth, has dealt with some injuries. But I think they feel really good about what he could be if he just gets a position and a chance to learn it. So I do think they have their eye on Alex Kappa as well. There's probably a little bit more of a transition there where he's probably not quite as game ready as Ali Marpet was 3 years ago. So I think they like him long term for sure, but I think they're probably more confident in Benenach right now. They'd be in a little bit of a predicament if one of the tackles went down, and then I think they'd probably if Dotson went down, for instance, I think they'd probably slide Benenach back out to tackle in that case and probably plug an Evan Smith in at guard if this were a short-term injury. But I think with Sweezy, what it told me was that they were more comfortable with what they saw in Benenach than they were whatever upside there was in whatever Sweezy could be at maximum health. Because it's something where he missed the entire offseason with his broken leg, I should say. And I think it set him back. It's just one of those where it opens a window where it reminds you what else you have. And I think they felt more comfortable. Sweezy probably never was playing at a level to justify $6.5 million a year. I think they felt good about it when they got him from Seattle. But the guy that was on the field last year for them probably wasn't playing at that level. So to Jason Light's credit, I think when he makes a mistake or sees something that's not working out as planned, he's willing to move on from it and kind of try something else.
I always liked that about him, and maybe kind of staying with that whole theme. Do you think if things do end up going south this year, which it's very likely, do you think there's any possibility where Jason Light stays around, where maybe Dirk Koetter wouldn't?
I think they're on separate tracks. I think it's something where if you felt like the talent was there, and Koetter didn't do everything he could to get more out of it, I suppose there's a window. It's tough. Light's probably more closely tied to Winston. So
right.
If you feel good about Winston, you might be more likely to feel good about Light, because he was more involved in bringing him here than Koetter was, probably. I think it's probably two separate decisions, but I think they can help each other out a lot.
Yeah, I can't believe it's we're kind of already talking about, the job security of the – well, but it's actually kind of been a little bit of a – overarching topic since it came out that they were keeping their jobs, but I think more and more after this whole suspension thing, the Bucs fans are kind of talking about, well, what's going to happen with the coaching staff? If it really does go as bad as as kind of everybody's expecting it to, it's I don't know. I personally like Jason Light. I think it might just be a little bit of homerism in watching Hard Knocks last year and kind of getting a sense for the kind of guy he is, but you're right. He does. If there's one thing I will say that he does really well, it's just he can admit when he makes mistakes and he's quick to correct that. You saw that with the whole Roberto Aguayo thing. So
right. Oh yeah, that's somewhere. For them to cut him loose is ultimately their acknowledgement that it didn't work out. I think they probably could have stuck with him longer, given another chance. But yeah, he's. I think he's usually not as concerned or aware with who made a decision to bring somebody in, whether it's your guy or not, and just wants to set up the best 53 he can and deal with the consequences of how much it costs and then what you lose as a result, later on.
Well, to tail end off of that, I saw a couple of takes this week about this whole injury guarantee with Winston's contract, and we all know about the whole suspension deal, and we all know about that. And maybe we'll get into it a little bit later, but what I haven't heard talked about a whole lot was this whole injury guarantee on his contract. Now, because he was suspended, from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the Glazers now they're they have the ability to not honor that final year, that fifth year option that they picked up on the contract. Is that true, or am I off on that?
Yeah, I mean, they've always had, I mean, it's an option. So you can elect not to do it. The only thing it's guaranteed for is injury. So the question mark would be if he's not playing well this year and it's week 16, he struggled, but he's still playing, and he blows out his knee or something like that, like a long-term injury, they would have to pay him. They would incur the salary cap hit of paying him because it would be guaranteed. So, I mean, that's where the liability is. So the only real risk they're taking in playing him right now is if he were to get hurt, they would have to honor, you know, what would be a very expensive contract to pay him, whatever, $20.9 million next year.
Yeah.
But it's not guaranteed beyond that. I mean, if they want to make a decision, I think March, like second week of March, is when it would become guaranteed. So they have up until that point, kind of up until basically the start of free agency next year, to make a decision whether to move forward with him or not. I think right now, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but do you get the sense that's sort of, that maybe that's playing a factor? Maybe if things are going bad, they might sit him down, lest he risk injury?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think if you have him, if you're confident enough to play him, you'll take that risk. I mean, if they were on the fence enough with him that they didn't want to even deal with the injury risk of triggering a 19 or $21 mm-hmm. million dollar option, and then he probably isn't the guy. They might have made that decision even earlier.
Right.
So I think they're comfortable right now moving forward with him and giving him a chance to use this season to prove himself, you know, worth what would be a hefty raise for next year.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel. I'm very torn on the whole situation. I was kind of like 50-50 on drafting him. Then when we drafted him, I was like, well, you know, let's see. I'll give the guy a chance. And then all this stuff comes out, and you're kind of like, it's very torn as a Bucks fan as far as, you know, how do I cope with this morally of like, God, I love this football team. I've loved this football team my entire life, but it just irks me that the guy's playing quarterback for us, but I want to see him do well. It's such a strange thing to me, and I know you've been doing it.
And it's for a lot of fans. Yeah, I mean, you see that. I think there's a lot of Bucks fans that are – I think there's definitely some that are completely polarized to one and the other. Some
that
he can do no wrong. They will ride with him until he is ineligible to play, that kind of thing. And there's others that have already dismissed the idea of being able to root for him, and they've moved on. And there's a middle ground right now, I think, that is like you, isn't really sure what to make of it, isn't necessarily comfortable rooting for him individually. And we kind of went through the whole deal with the jerseys and that. And are you comfortable wearing a jersey of somebody that has done something like this or been accused of something like this off the field? So, yeah, I think it's created a lot of conflicts and kind of there's a broad spectrum of Bucks fans in terms of their level of forgiveness or tolerance or what they'll allow a player to do off the field before it keeps them from really being comfortable rooting for him on the field.
I tweeted this out on July 4th, and I think it kind of reminds me of like America. I love America. I would never want to live anywhere else but America. But America does a lot of things that I disagree with generally, and that kind of drive me crazy. But at the same time, I love America. So same thing with the Bucks. The Bucks are going to do a lot of things that drive me crazy. And they've employed people like Michael Pittman and Warren Sapp that have just been like, ugh, awful people off the field. But God, I just want to see this football team win. Maybe sometimes you kind of roll the morality dice, or I don't know how you put it, but it's just, ugh.
Right. Oh no. I mean, you have to cut corners somewhere, and sometimes it's betting against injury, and sometimes it's just tolerating things that other teams might not tolerate. So, you know, they've had this in the past. It's not like Jameis is the first guy they've had that's had a questionable off-field flag coming in. You know, once you've had Jeremy Stephens on your roster,
that's right.
That's the bar pretty high for everybody else for a long time.
I forgot about that. You're right. I know you wrote an article. I think it was, I believe it was you. Like, I know Cameron Braid has come out sort of in voice his opinion on the whole matter, or rather came out in support of Jameis and rather Deshaun Jackson did the same. Do you get the sense in the locker room that it's an atmosphere of support? And obviously you're not going to tell me if, you know, which guys don't support it, but do you hear anything that maybe some guys might be on the fence about it?
No, I really haven't. I mean, it's one of those where, again, if you have that opinion, you're probably keeping it to yourself right now. I mean, there are people that were asking, why are we even run the comments from Braid, because it's kind of like anybody's going to get on the radio knowing they're going to get asked about Winston. I felt like Braid was probably a little bit more supportive than he needed to be. I think there'd be a polite level of Jameson's done a lot of good things for us. You know, I think we all make some mistakes. We're hoping he can move forward. You could say something like that. And Cam Braid, to his credit, was pretty unequivocal in saying, you know, I love him. He's someone I like being associated with. I have a lot of fun with him. You know, it conceded that we don't really know everything that happened in Arizona. But all his interactions with Jameis have been very positive. Likes him as a teammate, likes him as a leader. I felt like he probably was more in his quarterback's corner than just a cursory politeness on the radio would require him to be.
Yeah, and I think maybe rightfully so in his case. And I think if you look at Winston as a whole, like he's I'm not a huge fan of him, but if you look at him from his rookie season on, or you know after his rookie season, he's tried very, very hard, very hard to kind of turn it around and clean his image up and try to do the right thing. He just had his baby today. He's married, and I think he's trying very, very hard to turn it around. So I see that. I can appreciate that, you know.
Yeah, it's hard. There's kind of, I kind of use the word, there's a duality, if you will, in that it he's been very active in the community, and he's very good with kids, and has taken a lot of time in the community to build a lot of goodwill with people. It doesn't mean he didn't do what he's accused of. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of process both sides of that, and that he can be a really good person with kids and in the community and giving and helpful with teammates and a good football player and a good leader, but still do things off the field that shouldn't be tolerated. So you have to just decide how much of one thing lets you tolerate so much of another thing. And the Bucs have to decide that as a franchise too. So yeah. That's something everybody's processing at different levels right now, I think.
Yeah. Do you see, is there any possibility that I see Teddy Bridgewater's name thrown out there, Nick Foles? I mean, is there any sort of validity to that? I mean, do you see the Bucs making kind of move?
What I tend to think is that I think the Bucs knew this was a real possibility. I mean, this happened in November. I'm sure they probably were more aware than we were as things progressed with what exactly might have happened. So you had to at least allow for the possibility you were dealing with a multi-game suspension here. And I think given that, to see that, you know, all they felt the need to do is re-sign Ryan Fitzpatrick. They didn't draft a quarterback. They didn't go out after any of the more, you know, I guess you'd say higher tier quarterbacks that were available to him. So, I mean, Bridgewater's interesting in that it just depends. I mean, I get Jets fans that are telling me Bridgewater's going to be the starter over Sam Darnold, which I don't really believe. I mean, the Jets put a number 6 overall pick and 3 second round picks into getting Sam Darnold. To me, when you do that, you have to put everything you can into developing him and cultivating him from the start. So I think he's going to be the guy for them. If not week one, certainly for the majority of this season. So then if you feel good about Josh McCown, not only as a starter, but kind of as a mentor, as a stopgap, I don't know why you need to pay Teddy Bridgewater $6 million. So his contract is oddly created in a way that the Jets can get out and only owe him like $500,000, which would put him kind of back on the free market probably first week of September or whenever they wanted to get rid of him. It could be that they can trade him. Maybe there's another injury and somebody gets in a dire need of a quarterback and they can trade him for a low-round draft pick. But you're only getting him for 1 year. So I don't know that teams would give up that much to get him. But I think the Jets are probably holding out, hoping that there's a supply or a demand, I should say, that's greater than what's out there right now. But, I mean, he would be, if the Buccaneers were concerned about Jameis in a more long-term sense, not being out 3 weeks, but just whether he's the guy, Bridgewater would give you a relatively inexpensive window to check somebody else out without having to completely reset with the draft next year. I mean, you don't know who's going to be available in the draft or how, you know, this is a year where there are lots of guys at the top of the draft, 4 quarterbacks that were kind of worth top 10 picks. You don't know where the Bucs are picking. You don't know what they think of those quarterbacks. So it's all very hypothetical right now. And the way they've handled this to this point makes me think they're still trying to play out a scenario where Winston is able to redeem himself and play himself back into everybody's favor and kind of put himself in position to be a long-term solution again. But again, a lot can play out along that in the next 2 seasons here.
It's a lot of doom and gloom with Bucks fans, but the reality is it's just three games, and it's three games that that even with Winston, you're kind of like, that's going to be tough. So,
I mean, when that schedule came out, I said that they could be a very good team and be 1-2 or even 0-3 in that stretch. So it's in one sense it puts them now in this position where it feels like probably any win they get in those first three games is going to be seen as a bonus.
Yep.
But again, once you get him back, I mean, their middle of the season schedule, kind of that week, whatever, 4-6 or 4-6-7 is kind of, you're dealing with, you know, Bears in there, Browns, Bengals. They're winnable games to where they could get themselves back into 500. You know, it's not hard to get back to whatever 5-5 or something like that, mm-hmm. to where you can, you know, if the wild card's to be had at 9-7, it would be in play for you with six games to go.
And I know you got to get out of here. So finally, I don't know if you saw this today, but Ryan Leaf put a photo today on Instagram, and he kind of where he it was a letter that Hunter S. Thompson had wrote to Jim Irsay about drafting Ryan Leaf over Peyton Manning, and one of the reasons was because of the havoc that Warren Sapp could wreak in the backfield. So like, Hunter S. Thompson was writing about this defense, you know, way back in 99. So, like, what is that? Like, this is...
I totally missed that. That's wild.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy to think about the fact that this defense, or at least Warren Sapp himself, was just so feared in the league that Hunter S. Thompson himself had to pen a letter to Jim Irsay.
So I don't know that I realized that he had that much of an interest in the NFL. That's amusing to hear. But
yeah, me either. Yeah, I thought it was more booze.
It's
amazing,
the people that you don't even realize were NFL fans or care about the NFL that have this massive interest in the league that you just don't realize.
Yeah, well, Greg, I appreciate you coming on the show and taking time out of your day again. Like I said, you know, you got to put that content out daily, and you make a living off of it. So I really enjoy your work, and thank you today at least for educating Bucks fans on the difference between journalism and being a reporter, because I know a lot of those fans need that kind of a education, especially when it comes to your colleague Tom Jones, who they for some reason, I don't know, I love him personally. I love Tom Jones. I hate read some of his articles, but he's a smart dude. He knows what he's talking about. He moves papers, and he, you know, puts his opinion out there. So.
Yeah, I think not everybody gets it, but he knows what he needs to do.
Exactly. So I appreciate you coming on, and Greg, thank you so much. All right. Jesus Christ, guys, let's talk about these Tampa Bay Lightning, because there's news. There's news to be had, and I am joined today by Chase. He's a good friend of mine through a season long group chat in my Twitter DMs. But he's a contributor to Bolts by the Bay. So Chase, welcome, sir, to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What is going on, man? Are we getting Erik Karlsson or what? How?
So the weird thing about these Karlsson sweepstakes that are going on is that 2 days ago, all the insiders said Dallas, easily Dallas, clear front runner is Dallas, and everybody else would just go home. Now they said that it's basically a done deal for the Lightning.
Wow.
So I'm not ready to commit either way, just for my own emotional health. But it's been a wild ride over these past few days.
I know, dude. The John Tavares thing kind of took me for more of a ride than I thought I was gonna go through. Like, I thought, like, yeah, whatever. We're sending a contingency to John Tavares. It's fine. But on Saturday, like, I was like, oh fuck, what if we get him? Like, oh my god.
Yeah. So I knew that the Lightning would be in big on either Tavares or Karlsson. Ended up being both, but I'm more on Tavares.
I'm sorry, it cut out for a second. You're more what?
I'm more in on Karlsson than I was on Tavares, because the Lightning have a really solid forward group already. If adding Tavares would, you know, make some would make some 1Cs play some second line minutes, third line minutes, and that's,
oh boy,
helpful as a defenseman.
Yeah, I think my occasional co-host Anthony says a lot, it's like Lightning have the, we can absorb it in the forward depth, but the thing we don't have is that defenseman, and certainly not like a scoring defenseman like Erik Karlsson. So hell yeah, dude. I think this supports my theory of Eisenman just putting it all on the table. He's just whipping his dick out and like, listen, everybody come here for the cup now. We can't resign any of you, but come here now.
Has any of that changed since he's been with the Lightning? Because, I mean, look at this trade deadline, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you had all of these defensemen that were rumored that, you know, to be moving. You had Falk, lots of rumors around Falk, lots of rumors around Mike Green, you know, a few rumors around Tanev, and then McDonough. And the McDonough to Tampa deal didn't come through until after the trade deadline was technically over. Like, the paperwork's already in, so obviously it still counted. But there's not a doubt in my mind that Carlson was holding, or sorry, that Eisenman was holding that up. He said, "Who do we want? Where's our best return? And all of you are going to wait until I'm done deciding."
The Eisenman plan must be seen through. The NHL
Absolutely.
Must wait. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the dude knows how to deal. So, We're getting way off. We're going a lot of different directions here, but let's keep it on Carlson for now. Do you really think this? I mean, the pieces are moving. The pieces that we traded Schuster over to Anaheim. So, Schuster signed with Anaheim, but sort of, I feel like the pieces are moving, right?
Yeah, so the pieces are moving. I was a little bit surprised by Paquette getting a new contract today because that just took another million from the already small cap space that we have to deal with right now. But, you know, I honestly, if the Carlson deal was going to happen, a $1 million contract isn't going to derail that.
Right. But
you know, thinking about it, at first I was a little concerned, but then, you know, if it was that big of a deal, then Eisenman would know that that's not where that $1 million needs to go.
I just, what does this do for us long term? Because certainly, if Carlson comes in, he's got to have a new deal, right?
Yeah, so that's the problem. He is on the last year of a very, very manageable contract, and then as soon as that contract is up, his contract will suddenly become very, very unmanageable, especially to a team like the Lightning, who before Paquette was signed had the fifth. Lowest remaining cap space in the entirety of the league.
Oh God.
Yup.
I mean, you got to think though. So then that means that if or when this goes off, then that means Kucherov might not be getting that long term deal. Certainly, I think Sergachev might not be getting the kind of deal that he wants or at all.
Yeah. Don't forget Vasilevsky next season too. That's gonna the Lightning need to lock him down.
Yeah, Vasilevsky. Yeah, that is like a – I mean, Kucherov, you know, I would hate to lose Kucherov. That'd be a fucking massive blow. But for as big of a blow that losing Kucherov would be, losing Vasilevsky is like losing two Kucherovs. So,
oh, Vezina finalist at age 23, you don't find that. That's not something that you just are able to go into free agency and re-sign.
Yeah.
That is not something that – it's not an asset that comes along near often enough to merit him being a casualty of the salary cap.
He should have won it. He really should have won the Vezina, or Vezina, whatever. should have fucking won it, dude.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised they still gave it to Rene with the playoff choking. But, I mean, the end, you got to look back at the entirety of the season. And he did have – so the thing is, he had numbers that were either – even two or slightly less than Vasilevsky's. So if we're going by based on numbers alone, it's Vasi. But, I mean, I do feel like Rene has been kind of snubbed in the past in his career, so I guess it makes up for it because it's not like he's a bad goalie or he wasn't deserving of it. You know, I think that there were three very deserving candidates, of course. And, I mean, honestly, you know, Hellebuck from Winnipeg, just given that he's, you know, this year was his big year, I was expecting him over Rene, but... Yeah, I'm biased, so I say Vasi, but
I mean, apparently the voting stopped right before or after the first round of the playoffs. So like the choking really
exactly
didn't come into play.
It came after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sucks, but
everyone that casts their vote says, "Oh,
statistically, fucking Vasi should have won." But whatever. I'm not gonna, you know. At least we got a Norris winner. But at least we locked a Norris winner up for next to nothing. So
yeah,
it's fine.
And so let's talk about his contract for a minute, because man, do I appreciate that now with all of the contracts going around the league. Man, 7.8. I will take that over 11 any day of the week. Dude. And I think I'd rather have Hedman than Doughty on my team. I really would.
I really think that I don't know. This could be just, this is all entirely speculation, but I think that Hedman and Stamkos kind of were like, you know what, let's do it here, let's do it together. And they kind of took those team friendly contract, or yeah, they took the team.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah. So I mean, and maybe Hedman can talk a little sense into Carlson and be like, look, dude, yeah, come
and
on.
I do think that that's the pull, because if it was about the money to Carlson, if it was about, you know, where he can make the most, then I think that he would have already been gone by now.
Right. But I'm sure he looks at it and like, God, they're so close. They're right there. I could help him get that cup. I mean, I could push him over the edge.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's good. I mean, if he's not, I mean, we're kind of, this year's the last deal for Kucherov's bridge deal, right?
Yes. So this is okay. The last season for Kucherov's bridge deal. And he's not going to take another deal that's going to give the Lightning time like that. He's going to want to get paid, and he's going to want to get paid for a long time.
As well, he should. I mean, I love Kucherov, but he's, he looks over the pond and sees Alex Ovechkin doing what he's doing with the cup. And I'm sure he wants that Alex Ovechkin money. But
something that I see in Stamkos and Hedman that I don't see in Kucherov is their willingness to, you know, take a team more team friendly deal.
Oh, yeah.
Their willingness to sacrifice a little bit so the team can keep going. I think that Kucherov is more about that star status. You know, we've all heard the rumors that he is a negative force in the locker room, that he's, you know, a bit commanding, a bit ill-tempered, a bit, you know, all this. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily doubt that. But at the same time, he scores 100 points for my team, so I don't particularly care.
Yeah, dude, Kucherov gives zero fucks about the Tampa Bay Lightning. I am sure of that. I mean, I was sure of that in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Final this year. So, or rather, I'm sorry, Game 6, rather. So yeah, no doubt, but I sincerely hope that we keep him. I mean, locker room presence be damned. He's too fucking talented to worry about. He's like Terrell Owens, man. You can't not have him in your fucking locker room.
Oh yeah, no, you can. We got Hedman and Stamkos to do damage control and rally the team. You can. I don't care as long as he scores 100 points.
Yeah, you know.
And obviously, him and Stamkos have chemistry, and obviously he likes that line. So I mean, I don't have a problem with it.
I don't want him on the same line. That's the thing. Like why didn't we break him up last this playoffs? Like it's. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that is true, but I don't like the I don't like Cooper's tactic of just putting everybody in the line blender and seeing what comes out on each line. Yeah, I'm not
true.
A fan of that, because, you know, guys can't get to know each other. Guys can't get to, you know, play with each other and develop proper chemistry. It's just like, all right, let's spin a wheel and him. Those are your line mates. Let's do it. Exactly. You know, how can you expect to get anything solid going like that, you know?
You're right. I mean, but I think, you know, like we keep saying, like our forwards are so talented that I think it doesn't matter. Not that it doesn't matter, but I think that there's a better line combination to be had. You know, obviously our first line in the playoffs was outstanding. Well, was it really outstanding?
Oh, yeah. Cooch averaged over a point per game up until the very end. And, yeah, Stamkos had not very many goals, but he had a few assists. I mean, they kind of went dark there at the very end, but then again, so did the entirety of the Lightning's roster.
Yeah, that's true. Like, when you don't score a fucking thing, then I guess it doesn't matter. But I don't know.
Exactly.
I think when you're talking, I mean, maybe put Alex Killorin down on the fourth line and kind of bump everybody down. Like, I don't know. I think that I'd like to see, like, what about JT Miller, Nikita Kucherov, and Braden Point on the same line? Like, what about something like that? Like,
that'd be fine with me, because Point has proven himself as a playmaker and a setup guy. He can score, he can dangle. We all remember when he made Dadonov literally look like he just came out of minors. But Yeah, I'd be fine with that line. Honestly, Stamkos and Point are two very, very talented centermen. I don't think you can go wrong with either one centering your line. But
and
I think you can put
Anthony Cirelli or Yanni Gourde, like you can put one of those, you know, either of those guys up on the second line. Like it's,
I am all in favor of giving Cirelli more minutes. I think Cirelli can be a stud for the Lightning. You know, obviously not a star. He's not going to turn into some, right, you know, Panarin, or he's not going to turn into, you know, someone that's gets paid the big bucks to score all these goals. But I think that he's going to be a scrappy player. He's going to be a player that tries hard every night, and he is going to be a player that is not afraid to put himself in some rough patches for the puck. And yeah, I like that.
Okay, we figured it out, guys. All right, yeah, we got our lines sorted out. I mean, playoffs, here we come. Stanley Cup final.
And all of this versatility in the Lightning's forward lines is exactly why I'm more in on, if we're going to make a big splash in free agency, it's got to be for Carlson. Because we have all of these guys that can make an impact on the forward group, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we put Point on this line. We put Stamkos on this line. You know, either way, it's going to be a good line. And, you know, even down to the fourth, you know, third and the fourth line, you got guys like Yanni Gourde, you got guys like Tyler Johnson. You know, those are guys that can hold their own, of course. So, and then you look at the defensive depth, and, you know,
God,
Girardi,
if we get Carlson, the depth, who cares? It's, I mean,
yeah,
we're good.
I mean, yeah, Girardi, good for 25 minutes a night. You know, he's a workhorse. He holds his own defensively, but he's not going to bring anything offensively to the table. Coburn, hopefully on his way out of the Lightning's lineup, really not doing too much for him anymore. Got money in his contract. That's about it. Strawman's great. I think that we can still get a few more years out of Strawman.
Yep.
His contract's going to be up soon, but he's starting to show his age. And you know, that's not anything against Strawman, that's just how it happens. I mean, so I really think that the bigger impact, if we were to pursue someone big during free agency, it's going to be on defense.
Dude, you got to think, like, what's that going to, like, going forward? Maybe put Victor Hedman on the same line with Sergachev, and then have fucking Erik Karlsson on the same line with who? You know, Braden Coburn or McDonough, yeah. And then you got Coburn and Dan Girardi to round up the dinosaur pairing. So, you know,
name me a top four in the entire league better than Hedman, Carlson, McDonough, Sergachev.
No, there is none. It would be fucking ridiculous. And the thing is, there isn't one. I think what's the genius of Yzerman and maybe Cooper, you could say, kind of came out in the playoffs where, They played Dan Girardi just the right way in the regular season for him to be effective in the playoffs, because, like, okay, he's an old dude. He's not gonna be very effective regular season. Maybe don't play him as much. You know, don't give him the kind of minutes. And then suddenly in the playoffs, like, you know, okay, get out there and go get him. So
yeah, exactly.
But then you don't have to do that. You don't have to do it anymore if you trade for Carlson. So I don't know. It's be nuts.
Yeah. So there's a slight problem to our perfect top four, though, and that's that, you know, most people are saying if we were to get Carlson, Sergachev's got to go, and I agree with that and disagree with that at the same time, because it's certainly Sergachev is someone that the Senators would want back. Young defenseman, promising defenseman, got a really, really high ceiling, but at the same time, I feel like Yzerman would want to break up his core group, wouldn't want to let Sergachev go. I feel like if there were to be a deal, it would be involving Cal Foot.
You mean they're not going to take Ryan Callahan and Anton Strawman for Erik Karlsson? I mean, come on.
So,
it's a great trade. It'll work in
so
NHL.
I've got a theory on that, actually. I've got something worked out, because, you know,
okay,
earlier we had, you know, all the analysts were saying that Tampa to Carlson, we got that figured out. We just need an extra team to take on some cap space to make salaries work. Okay. So we know that Ottawa wants to get rid of Bobby Ryan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Ottawa – oh, man, his contract is abysmal.
I like where you're going.
he will forever be known as the guy that was drafted right after Sidney Crosby and is nowhere close to anywhere as good.
Well, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. It's like when LeBron James got taken out of high school, and then like the next year, everybody's like, you know, Carmelo Anthony is the next LeBron. It's like, no, it's really not.
not quite.
Not at all.
Yeah. So there is a team that's will benefit from the Lightning success, and that's the New York Rangers. The Rangers have a lot of cap space too. And you know, as part of the McDonough Miller deal, the Lightning have a conditional pick to give them next year. If they win the cup, that is a second round right now. If they win the cup, it turns into a first. So what would be the downside for the Rangers for taking on some dead cap space for a little while and then getting a first round pick? Because the Rangers aren't competing for the cup next year. The Rangers aren't competing to even win next year.
True.
Yeah. So if they have this cap space and, you know, a draft pick is linked to them, that could be the difference between a first round and a second round player. It's a no-brainer for them to want to help Tampa.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, well, realistically, who's going in this Carlson trade? I mean, a big piece has to go, right? There's not a fan favorite is gone. If Erik Karlsson is on our team this year.
So for cap purposes, I think it's going to be Callahan. So we see a lot of these guys like Killorn and Tyler Johnson and Callahan himself, you know, they all have NTCs. So right. that makes moving them a little problem. That makes it a little problematic. But Callahan's is modified. So he has a 16-team yes list. And I would not be surprised at all if his former team was one of the yeses.
I feel like Callahan. Where's the value in Callahan, though?
See, that's the thing. It's not that he's you know, a value piece for the Rangers. You know, yeah, cool. They get back, you know, former captain. They get back former leader.
Right.
And you know, it's not like he can't produce. He's just, you know, he's hurt frequently. It's not like he's physically not able to produce anymore. So he will help them. But at the same time, their biggest win from getting Callahan back comes in the form of a second round pick turning into a first round pick.
Okay. I like that. So Callahan's a big piece, and then I guess it can't be anybody else. I mean, obviously Tyler Johnson. We've gone past the point of no return with his trade clause. So.
So I feel like Yzerman really likes Johnson. I feel like, you know, he saw a scrappy young kid that was too small to make it in the league, works his way up, and, you know, gets a deal. I feel like if the Lightning were going to move him, they would have done it before his no trade clause kicked in, because why would they wait until after that and have to go through him and get his permission to move him when they could have just done whatever they wanted right before?
Yeah. I feel like you're right.
People keep moving up, bringing up Tyler Johnson's name. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Johnson's the piece that can move.
Obviously not.
Yeah. So Coburn's contract is also modified. So we could move Coburn as well, get rid of his cap. And I'm trying to think who else. I mean, again, all these guys with, you know, the no trade clauses, it makes it hard for the Lightning. So there's merit in giving these no moving clauses.
Right.
Players like it, obviously. They don't like being uprooted and having to, you know, sell all their possessions from one city, you know, getting rid of their houses or whatever and uproot their family, move to a new one.
In so Dan Girardi's case, he was gifted a house, let's be honest here.
I mean, yeah. But so, you know, there's merit to this because, you know, you have the longer term and the promise of not being moved. That usually leads to a bit of a, you know, a lesser rate for the players.
Well,
so,
Chase, what do you make of a player growing up in that particular market? I mean, maybe that's a huge factor according to Toronto.
Well, yeah, as we see with Tavares, that is a big deal. It means and we saw with Drouin too. We saw it firsthand as Tampa fans. You know, Drouin, he kind of got here, and you know, he was talented and he was really talented. I think that he benefited from his line mates a lot more than
yeah, you think,
than he's benefiting in Montreal right now. But You know, there's definitely a pull to that childhood dream, that childhood desire to play for your team that you cheered for growing up. We even saw it with Kevin Shattenkirk a few years ago. Got traded right at the deadline to Washington, and as soon as they got bounced in the second round, we've heard that story before. He says, "I'm signing with the Rangers because the Rangers were my hometown team. They were the team that I cheered for growing up, and that's who I'm going to go with." So I don't think that's something that should be counted out. But at the same time, that's not something that benefits Tampa really as a quote unquote non-traditional hockey market.
Chase, I think it's as simple as this. If I am an elite baseball prospect and I come up in the Rays system, and the Rays offer me a contract and the Yankees offer me a contract, I'm going to tell the Rays to go fuck themselves. Even though I grew up as a Rays fan and I'm a diehard Rays fan till the day I die. I want to play for the fucking New York Yankees, okay? Like, the Yankees are the Yankees. They're the classic baseball team. You think of baseball, you think of the Yankees. So it's the same thing with the Maple Leafs. You think of hockey, and you think of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I don't think it's as much that John Tavares grew up a Maple Leafs fan, but I do think there is something to say about, like, the likes of Montreal and Toronto. Yeah. Kind of luring people based on the mystique, because listen, yeah, up until, you know, I would, if I was a hockey player, I'd love to play for one of those teams because they're classic teams. They're storied. Yeah.
The
franchises.
History of it, the history of success, the original six, you know, it's something exactly. That everybody strives for, you know, everybody wants to have.
Yeah, you want
the old time hockey.
You want to be talked about, you know, in the same conversation as the legends that won them those championships. Like, that's where you want your name to be there. Like, yeah, it's great to win the championship with Tampa. I have no doubt. Like, you know, raising the cup at Tampa for Dave Vaynerchuk, I'm sure was a great moment of his life. But I'm sure he would have rather have done it. If you give him the chance to do it all over again, he would have rather have done it with a more storied franchise because he could have been a part of their lore. So I get it. I fucking get it, you know?
I mean, yeah, it makes sense. But, you know, that's something that Tampa has had to really overcome because they're not a traditional hockey market. We even saw this year, you know, during the playoffs, we saw New Jersey fans
hear that, Carlson?
Scoff at Tampa
you
just
hear
because
that?
They're not a – Yeah, just because they're not a hockey town. You know, New Jersey fans said, hockey in Tampa? What are you talking about? And then 5 games later, we show them what they were talking about. And, you know, we see teams, you know, even this year in these trade talks you see Ottawa fans, you know, being rightly upset. They say, I don't know why Tampa thinks that they're linked to every big name in the world. And I don't think that I don't understand why they know what they're talking about. They don't know anything about hockey because they're in Florida. That's something that I think that Eisenman's really had to fight. And surely the fans have to fight that, of course. But it's a stereotype about Tampa that is looking dimmer and dimmer each, you know, as each season goes on, because we're continuing to prove that you don't have to be from Canada. You don't have to be from the original six to be, you know, one of the most competitive teams in the league right now.
And you don't have to be from the original six to be what the northern guys call a hockey town. Like, fuck you with your hockey town. We're Tampa.
Oh, good.
We do our own thing.
That makes me so mad when they just think that just because it snows up there for like 5 months out of the year that they're more entitled to have a hockey franchise than anyone else. Get out of here.
Yeah, get out of here. All right, Chase. Well, I think that's about it, right? Is there anything else? Did we miss anything on the Lightning here? Is there
Unless something big happened while we've been on the phone, I don't think so. But
it might have. Yeah, I haven't checked Twitter.
If you know, I honestly wouldn't doubt if we all stayed up late into the night, nothing happens, and we wake up tomorrow morning and there it is. You know, it seems that the nighttime is like the prime Eisenman hours, the prime, you know, let me get this done and shock the world in the morning kind of thing. I wouldn't doubt that a bit.
Yeah, well, you guys were sleeping. Eisenman was working. He was working hard.
Absolutely. So do I think that the Lightning managed to land Carlson? I wouldn't doubt it at all. I would not doubt that they get Carlson out of this, whether that is for the short term, you know, just this season, or whether they manage to, you know, move the cap around and just give a big middle finger to the salary cap, then I wouldn't doubt either option. But all in all, I do think before the start of next season, the Lightning have Carlson on their roster.
that excites me very much. I hope you're right. Holy shit. Especially considering some of the other offseason moves, but yeah. Okay. Well, you can Bolts by the Bay, am I correct? Or
yeah.
Did I fuck that up? No. Bolts by the Bay.
No, Bolts by the Bay, website and Twitter. We do both. So yeah, Lightning content year round.
And you can follow Chase Kimball.
Yes. Okay. There it is.
at Chase_150. Knowledgeable guy, super knowledgeable about hockey. We're in a group chat together, and all I do is like go in there and be like, "Well, I'm drunk," but you know, he actually like offers, you know, measured takes on the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I recommend you follow him and check out the website he contributes to, Bolts by the Bay. So, thank you, sir. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Anytime.
All right, and I think that's Word of the Bay for this week. I have been Kyle. bold predictions. Let's get some bold predictions. I predict that Wilson Ramos is fucking gone. And let's see. Erik Karlsson signs to a new long-term deal. I think that's it. Go to patreon.com/wordofthebase. Support our podcast. Follow us on WOTB Podcast or at WOTB Podcast. You can follow me at Kyle WOTB. And guys, thanks for listening. I feel like this has been a great show. I'm super happy with how this all turned out. So thank you for listening to War of the Bay. I have been Kyle, and we'll see you next week.